Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Fiat and Rock and Roll. I'm Stefan Grassmann, and today I'm joined by Thomas Langbein, Chief Commercial Officer at Trevor. Trevor defines itself as a company that offers a digital asset operating system for financial institutions. Thomas and I know each other for quite some years now, and finally we have the opportunity to talk publicly in this podcast. Welcome, Thomas.
Welcome, Stefan. Thanks a lot for having me here in this podcast. It's really a pleasure to participate in the session.
Cool. Let's dive in and get a bit of background about you personally. Tell us a bit, where are you coming from? What's your professional career up to here?
Well, I originally started in traditional banking, so in finance with Commerzbank. Spent there some years, first in, I would say, classical banking, then in short stations in asset management and equity capital markets. Before I decided to join the consulting space, focusing mainly on financial institutions like banks, basically banks, where I spent like 15 years in focusing on designing their strategy, running and executing the strategy, and also, of course, came in touch with digital transformation projects. And from a company side, it was my first station was at EY, Ernst & Young, focusing on international projects, mainly in the US and UK markets, followed by a longer stay, more than 10 years, with a McKinsey spin-off boutique, a really exciting time where we focused on banks. And finally, I joined Accenture Strategy in their financial services department, again focusing on mainly digital transformation and tech projects, and also, I mean, fostering my interest in digital assets and DLT technology in general, I would say. And that was when I reflect the time back, also more or less the first time when I came in touch with crypto and digital assets. It was around 2017, and also fostered by a good friend of mine, Philipp Sandner, who founded the Frankfurt School Blockchain Center, and of course got my interest and also got me updated on everything that happened that time in crypto and digital assets around. So that was really the point where I said, okay, crypto might be a first step, and this really, it's really interesting from a technology perspective, but also it provides the foundation for, I mean, a future kind of capital markets. So you could that was at least what I was assuming at that time, redesign many processes in capital markets that I've seen in my consulting career before, and take advantages from the technology on, right? And that was the time where I went into the rabbit hole of digital assets and never got out of it again.
So I see a lot of similarities in here, started in a similar year. So I also got down the rabbit hole in 2017. I also was happy to know Philipp Sandner quite well personally. And I think Crypto Assets Conference in Frankfurt was maybe the venue where we met first some years ago, I guess. I think I remember that.
Must have been.
First,
I think since 2019 or 2020, I never missed any Crypto Assets Conference in Frankfurt.
Similarly like me, yeah. Cool. And then you found your way, I think, maybe partially on the private side, got interested into crypto assets. But then you also joined Trevor. Or was Trevor your first station in the crypto or digital asset space? Was that the direct follow-up to your consulting career?
No. When I'm thinking back, I finished consulting in 2019, where I decided to really dig into digital assets by joining a Frankfurt-based fintech, Rocksize Capital, where we focus on Oracle node operations for decentralized finance applications, basically, and also on a kind of market data offering for traditional financial players. Because we found out that if you would like to have a reliable and compliant market price for crypto, for example, for net asset valuation or other use cases, then it was quite hard to find one. It was not like in traditional finance that you just go to Bloomberg or the other providers and get the reliable, price for the asset. But, the more or less fragmented crypto market consisting of many, many players, also brought with it that there was no one price for crypto. And that was the angle where we got into the business. Quite exciting time. And I decided in 2023, so like 3 years ago, to join Trevor because two things. I mean, on the one hand, we found out that operating digital assets is an essential thing to be able to offer crypto to your clients. And at a time, I mean, the first traditional finance players were thinking about really early stage about providing crypto to their clients. And from my former career in consulting, I knew from some transition projects, the core banking infrastructure of the legacy, I mean, the legacy side of banks, not being able to operate crypto in any way or digital assets. So what I said is you would need a kind of addition to the existing core banking infrastructure covering the digital asset side of things. Because I know no bank would change the whole core banking system just to be able to operate digital assets. That would no one do, of course. So I knew the company Trevor itself and also the founder side, and I said, okay, it's a great product. It's exactly what the market requires, and also a great team and a good vision for the future, right? Because we say at Trevor that we are sure that every asset will become a digital asset in a few years' time. And then I decided, yeah, to join the company, and I'm there since 3 years. It was a good decision so far, very exciting times.
Can you tell us a bit about your role and responsibilities at Trevor?
Sure, happy to do so. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Trevor, responsible for defining, driving, executing the company's sales strategy and also covering strategic partnerships at Trevor. And I mean, that brings with me, and that was the reason that we met quite regularly at conferences to represent the company, of course, at leading industry events. All of this, of course, in close alignment with the CEO and co-founder Hans-Jürgen Griesbacher at Trevor, and also the marketing and product teams, which is a quite interesting thing because, of course, we always increase the capabilities we deliver to the clients by developing the product further. And that comes, of course, with all the market input. What does the market require for new use cases, and what are the use cases that are, I mean, right now in scope of our clients? And bringing in my background of traditional finance and tech, I'm right now bridging somehow between traditional finance and what we built in DLT and blockchain technology, and have daily discussions with all the market participants, basically our clients, banks and brokers.
Very interesting. So you're kind of a translator between the wannabe world where people want to head and the reality of your product, what you actually can deliver out of the box, and you push the boundaries, I guess, as far as I understand.
It's exactly what I'm trying to do each and every day.
Cool. I found out one pattern when I listened to you talking. It's about frictions. So you saw frictions in the market, be it in your old role at Blocksize Capital, but also now I think you, and that's a good way to think about startup opportunities, I would guess, that you look for frictions and solve them in a proper fashion. When we think, before we dive into Trevor more deeply, if we go more broadly, what are the biggest frictions today when institutions try to engage with digital assets more generally?
First of all, I think it's important to have the whole picture of digital assets, because when we talk about digital assets, it's more than one kind of asset class. It's, basically at least three or four different directions. So first of all, you have a kind of, I would say, custody, or the question how to safe, keep and store digital assets. The second question would be, I mean, the direction of crypto trading as a use case, and then maybe digital payments as the next one, right? And the last one would be, I think, tokenized assets. So having the whole picture in mind and designing the strategy consistent to those different directions is, I think, a quite important step in the first thing you have to think about when thinking about digital assets. What we've seen in the beginning, or as a friction maybe, is that sometimes market participants think about just one step, for example, having crypto trading for their clients, but not the next steps and further future, ahead. And this can sometimes be a kind of hurdle when entering the market, because you have to think, what would you need in the future for new use cases as well, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I, as I understand it, you come in when, I think, when your clients are a bit more committed, when it's not about experiments and proving the concept and doing some initial trades, but it's rather about operationalization, going constantly in maybe more than one asset class, not maybe going beyond crypto. Or what's the point where people start talking to you and getting more interested with your answers?
It's a good question. I mean, it differs a bit maybe. Sometimes you have a client who has a clear use case in mind, right? For example, they would like to run a kind of crypto trading for their end clients. If you are a traditional bank or a broker or a neo broker would like to set up this business, then you understand, okay, now we have to think about how to operationally set up the whole business. And that's the point where you think about different solutions. And if you understand what I said before, that there's a broader maybe strategy behind in digital assets containing of or consisting of cryptocurrencies, but also of digital payments and tokenized assets, then you would have a look for a solution where you would be able to also run this in the future, right? And that's the point where we got into touch and come into the discussion. So the typical case might be that a bank says, okay, let's start quite lean with a setup consisting of one trading venue and maybe one custody solution, and be able to scale this and change this and keep the flexibility in the future. Let's say for maybe digital payments, for settlement processes in the future, or also for trading and transferring digital securities or tokenized assets in another form, right? And that's the discussion where we come in and discuss together what is the use case the client would like to design and execute, what is the right solution for this use case, and how can we support from Cleverside to go to have a quick go-to-market and also to keep them quite flexible for future changes and optimization.
Maybe coming last question regarding friction. When banks want to get access to crypto trading, what's the most surprising aspect maybe for them when compared to their traditional business? Is it the 24/7 trading, or is it the many digits that you can split up your crypto to, or what's the thing that that comes up and might surprise the clients most, and how do you help that in that situation? Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I don't know if it's a surprise, to be honest, but what is new, at least compared to the traditional finance world, is also the fragmentation of the process and the number of, I would say, ecosystem partners you need to run such a kind of business. Because in TradFi, you typically have a CCP, a CSD, and a kind of regulated market setup for trading and safekeeping of the assets and so on. And in crypto or digital assets in general, it's different. I mean, you need to understand who is needed to run such a setup. On the first hand, you understand, okay, we have a liquidity side, we have to go to the market, connect to liquidity providers or exchanges, trade, basically. The second way would be how to store the assets. And there are, again, two options, basically. It's either a fully regulated sub-custodian providing the custody, or just a custody tech provider enable you to run your own custody with a license as a bank, right? And there are maybe, depending on the use case, some other players like compliance venue providers, like for transactions, transaction processes, or for AML checks or other things regarding compliance. And then you would need another partner as well. And you have to understand, and that's maybe sometimes surprising, that just integrating a trading venue and maybe a custody solution is not enough to run this setup, because somehow you have to connect all those partners in the back end and to be able to have transfers between all those partners and to operate the settlement processes, for example, afterwards. And that's exactly where we come in as a kind of middleware or a kind of operating system, as we call us, because we bring in all the technical integrations, but also the core functionalities, and enable the bank to run this setup. And not ensure that they would not have, I mean, bad surprises at the end.
Okay, okay. Well, that leads us to Trevor. And I think for the listeners, it's important to explain maybe what Trevor's solutions actually consists of. So when we talk about an operating system or an operating middle layer, could you take us through your product and describe the core parts of it and the value proposition that you give to your clients?
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. I mean, Trevor is more or less, of course, how we call it, the digital asset operating system for fully regulated financial institutions. So our clients are banks and brokers, basically. We enable them to operate a digital asset setup in a secure and compliant way. That means to trade, transfer, manage digital assets, right? And we provide this as a kind of modular add-on to the existing core banking system. So you would be able to add to have the functionalities you require because it's not covered yet by the existing infrastructure as an add-on to the existing core banking system. Thus, by providing such a kind of holistic solution, we cover the end-to-end order life cycle on the one hand, but also the settlement flows behind. So our clients are able by the solution to have a covering of all digital asset classes as well. It's not only crypto, it's also digital payments like stablecoins, like other digital payment solutions, and of course tokenized securities as well, or tokenized commodities and other kinds of tokens. So including all technical requirements, so technical integrations basically that I mentioned before, it's the trading venues, exchange LPs, the custody tech, and regulate custodians or compliance integrations, we deliver an end-to-end solution to operate digital assets. MiCA compliant, of course, and providing all the functionalities you need.
When you say you are specifically focusing on regulated institutions, so what is so special about your solution that it helps these regulated entities? You just mentioned MiCA. So are you MiCA licensed or do you need to be MiCA licensed? And how does that behave in other jurisdictions?
A very good question. So we are a technology provider based in Graz, Austria, so in the EU. And we are not required to have a license at all. We are just providing the technology. But I mean, all of our clients are fully regulated, as I say, banks and brokers. So we have, of course, to fulfill all the requirements they have regarding MiCA, DORA, and other, requirements. And that includes, of course, when I say we enabled him to be, for example, MiCA compliant, that we have an order and execution management system as one of our modules, including the best execution feature and providing all the record keeping details you need for MiCA compliance, right? You have a snapshot of all the trades, of all the transaction data, so you can prove afterwards that you were fully compliantly executing the orders for your clients, right? And that's exactly where we come in and ensure that all those requirements are fulfilled by our clients.
So you have all the building blocks in place that makes it simple for your clients to get a MiCA license, for example. You fulfill certain key requirements when it comes to trading or safekeeping that clients have an easier day when they rely on your expertise that you assembled with other clients, obviously, in the past.
Absolutely, that's correct. So, I mean, you can understand Trevor as a kind of orchestration and management platform between the technical integrations and the client, enable them to offer, I mean, for example, crypto trading or digital asset trading in future for their clients. And I just described a first functionality, which is the order management and execution management system, order management towards the client. So taking the order and processing the order internally and execution management to execute it at the connected trading venues. The second module would be the treasury management and also the settlement functionality. So you will be able, if you, for example, trade as a bank against different liquidity providers, to have a post-trade settlement done at the end of the day, either manually or automated. By just one click, being able to get all the net exposure on the crypto side and also on the fiat side, have a reconciliation, and afterwards initiate a settlement on-chain for the asset side and SEPA for the fiat side, because maybe this is one of the surprises that you mentioned before and that you asked before. You still have two layers. I mean, you have the asset on the blockchain typically, but you have the payment flow in a traditional way as a SEPA payment, because we do not have the payment on-chain available for all of those transactions. And that's important to bring this together and to align this and to have a synchronous, I mean, process. And behind, it's also important to understand that you have to somehow do the bookkeeping and the subledger accounting for your end clients. Because again, the existing core banking system typically is not able to handle a maybe 12 digits after the separator asset in the core banking system. So you have to be able to have the client accounting somehow in the system. And that is exactly what our, I mean, we call it bookkeeping module does for the clients. And you will see the record keeping of each transaction for all of the customers, of all the trades in MiCA compliance, including all the maybe timestamps for trading best execution in the system, and ensure that you will, keep full flexibility and scalability for the future as well.
How is your relationship between Trevor and these core banking systems? So I think there are many of them out there. So I guess you need to write some adapters for each and every new bank core banking system that you somehow support. But me being a computer scientist from a background, I wonder if the precision of the core banking system isn't good enough. How do you do that, actually? Do you store additional data that isn't stored in the core banking system in your layer? Or how do you extend the core banking system to be more precise as needed?
That's a very good question. Thanks for that. Because it's, and you are from a technical side, and it's maybe easier to understand, but it's in general not that easy to understand. We have two worlds, I would say. We have the asset world, which is completely on-chain, which is a digital asset, right? And that's everything we cover in our system. But we are, of course, also able to have the fiat balances in our system. Just, I mean, a simple example why you would need that in the practice is if a client would like to trade and would like to have maybe a digital asset buy, then we would check, does the client have enough cash on his cash account to place and execute the order? We would reserve the amount, and afterwards we would have to give an update of the fiat cash accounting for the client. And that's exactly where we need a connection to the core banking system, because all the cash accounting is done in the core banking system, of course, of the bank. So we just retrieve the cash balance and we will give back an update after the trade happened, after the trade was filled. And that's exactly the relationship to the core banking system. And if you ask, how do we do that? How do we manage that? That there's no real, I mean, standard that works for all banks. It's more or less an individual integration. And we have different ways to connect core banking systems. I mean, the option that we would like to go to is, of course, the first choice would be an API. But it's not the case that, or not the usual case, that core banking systems provide APIs for external providers. So we also go other ways, typically like data exports, imports, or webhooks, or other kind of interfaces.
Okay, interesting. So you open up the surface of the bank beyond the capabilities of the core banking system, and you actually cover the areas that are more or less on-chain, and maybe even some stablecoin stuff that sits in a parallel world to the old world, if you will. Is that right?
That's a right understanding, like you frame it, because we more or less mirror the existing parts of the core banking system that are, I mean, existing for the traditional finance world to the digital asset world, because we provide the OMS, we provide the treasury management and settlement functionalities, we provide the subledger accounting for the clients. So end-to-end, the digital asset side, which is been added to the system. So as a result, you have a banking infrastructure that covers both the traditional financial world and the digital asset world.
Cool, interesting. Sounds complicated. How complicated is it to get started with your solution? So if I'm a new client, let's say a mid-sized bank, and I want to get going with Trevor, what does that mean in time or budget? What do I need to bring to the table?
That's a good thing. I mean, as you say, it sounds complex and is complex in the back end or in Trevor's system, but not towards our client. That's a good thing. How does the client typically get access to the Trevor system? There are two ways, basically. We provide, on one hand, a kind of front end, but it's not a front end for retail. It's a front end for internal use within the bank, maybe at a trading desk, for example. But most of our clients integrate the Trevor API into their system. It's a single integration of the Trevor API. And there we provide endpoints for each and every feature and functionality that we provide to the client. So it's just, I would say, an integration of the API. It's straightforward, it's well documented. And once you have integrated the API, you would have access to all the functionalities, but also to all the technical integrations at the back end. So to the trading venues, to the custody, to other providers, and you just define what would be your preferred setup to run the business. As I said, it could be in the beginning one trading venue, a custody solution, and then you can basically start from our side. We would set up the workspace for the bank. There are separate workspaces, of course, for each and every entity. And once this is set up, you as a bank would just have to onboard with the partners, so with the liquidity venue and or with the custody. I mean, if you are having the custody your own and running the tech your own, then this is even easier. And once you have done this, you can start, basically. Okay.
Sounds good. So some building blocks. I need you guys. I need a wallet infrastructure, custody, and some liquidity providers. And then we are set up to do the first crypto trade. What's the time frame? Let's say I've got an existing wallet infrastructure in place. How fast can that go?
I mean, this really differs from the use case, right? Let's assume you are a bank and running a kind of straightforward use case like crypto trading. Then setting this up from our side is quite, I would say, fast possible. We just set up the workspace for the bank, and then there would be a phase for the user acceptance testing of everything. And from our side, it would be ready to run. What comes next is the integration of the Trevor API into the bank's system. And that depends, of course, on the banking infrastructure as well. So what we typically do is some workshops in the beginning together with our clients and the tech teams on our side and on the client side to clearly define what has to be done to integrate the API. And also, if they would like to have this also ready, to integrate the core banking system for the fiat side. And once this is done, we can have a clear and well-defined roadmap for the integration. And then it's a matter of, let's say, typically 10 weeks, maybe 16 weeks. It depends a bit on how many people are involved on the banking side.
Sure. And you need to integrate it into their reporting, compliance procedures, et cetera, et cetera. I think that might be the lengthy process on the banking side, I guess.
Yes, you don't. It's exactly how you say. I mean, what we deliver is lots of data for each and every purpose, like for the tax reporting, for internal purposes, for balance account statements, maybe for the client side. And the bank typically takes those data and integrates it seamlessly into the existing workflows. So for the client side, it's the same. The client gets access typically via the existing front end of our client. So maybe a banking online portal, maybe a mobile app, also including then crypto and digital assets. And the same applies for the reporting and other things. So there is a seamless user experience for the client typically. That requires, of course, that our data is fed into the reporting systems and, yeah, taken by the bank to process all those reports and data.
So you need to be properly integrated into their development process, that the mobile app and the web page are released in a good fashion, that now the crypto reporting is set up and all your data from your system is seamlessly integrated into the bank's infrastructure. That's obviously an effort that's very dependent on the client side. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, cool. Did you see any changes in the last 2 to 3 years, how institutions approach you and your solution? I guess this must have been all about crypto 2 years ago or so. Do you see already changes with all that tokenized equities coming up and the modern thing? Or is that still a thing for the future?
It's exactly like you say. I mean, if I remember back like 2 or 3 years, discussions were mainly driven by cryptocurrency trading and the use cases around. Maybe at that time as well, some DeFi discussions, what you can do else, like lending, like staking and other things. But what we've seen then, also driven by, I would say, further regulation. So on the one hand, the MiCA regulation, of course, on the other hand, but maybe in Germany, for example, the EWPG, Electronical, I mean, Bonds and or Securities Act, allowing banks to digitally issue bonds and other assets on chain. And also the digital payment side, we've seen a change in the discussion. As I said before, the scope is now much broader than what we've seen like 3 years ago. It's not only crypto, it's payments, it's tokenized assets. And I mean, if you have a closer look at payments, then you would also of course see that it's not a single kind of digital payment. It's stable coins, it's CBMT, like tokenized deposits, it's CBDC, what we see now, the initiatives run, for example, at European Central Bank. And the same applies for tokenized assets. It's a broad range of tokenizable assets, for example, the bond side, but also in future, of course, the stocks and commodity as well. So what we see now is a shift towards those broader topics and have that also within the bank strategy, right? To say, okay, first step would be maybe crypto trading, but second step and third step is already planned there. And that's exactly how the banks think. They have established, I think, very good people on their side within the last 2-3 years, set up teams covering the broad range of topics, and now prepare to be able to be part in the future of the whole story of the future of capital markets, right?
Mm. Stepping into that area, when we said some of your clients might have started with crypto trading, which is a very special thing, and now you see these mainstream things like stable coins for payments or tokenized capital markets with tokenized securities. What does that change in your discussion with the client? Do you see now very different questions when the guys from the capital markets or from the global payment side come along? How does that change your conversation with clients?
It's also a very good question. I mean, you see on the one hand other people coming into the discussions. Before, you had kind of maybe crypto-driven people that are fascinated of the new technology and so on. But now also, of course, you see the cash side coming in, so all the payment processes, but also the capital market guys thinking about what can you do using DLT technology for the future of capital markets by tokenizing different kind of asset classes and what could be the advantage to do so, right? And the thinking is more now an end-to-end perspective. So you understand, okay, to really have the advantage out of the technology, you must be able in the future at least to have not only the asset on chain, but also the payment side on chain, to really have a DVP on chain, right? Or maybe an atomic or instant settlement or at least near-time settlement, right? This is not working or not properly working if you keep the payment side off-chain and have the asset on-chain. That's just half of the story. And that's more or less how things changed within the last 2-3 years, that now all those three parts are pieces of the puzzle, right? And completing the picture.
How does that, so then you easily get into an infrastructure discussion, huh? That's financial runtime. So if you get the money side also on chain, then your role gets even more fundamental than before. Before that might be, yeah, the crazy crypto guys that enable a new use case. We earn some money with crypto trading at the side of the bank. With that development that we just described, we get at the core of banking gradually. I think that doesn't happen overnight, but you can easily imagine that there will be very different questions asked also on your role. So you are still a startup at Trevor. I think you have good track record, but still a small young company. How does that change the behavior of your clients, and how do they talk to you? How do they address that issue that you might be a company that might go bankrupt over time? How do you handle these concerns of large banks when they talk to you?
This is also a very good question, because if you talk to established financial regulate and fully regulated banks, of course, this comes up as a kind of question for business continuity management.
Absolutely.
Also driven by regulations, of course. And there we also help our clients in, keeping a safe and secure environment for all the digital asset side by enabling them to as I said, quite flexible in exchanging or adding other partners, right? So if they would find out, for example, if we take the order execution, we are executing maybe against three different trading venues. Maybe one trading venue is sometimes off, then we would automatically route the orders to the other ones, right, that are live and that are on chain at that moment. So we cover in that kind of regards also the business continuity of the use case, right? And the same applies for Trevor itself. So if we would not be maybe on chain anymore, which luckily never happened before, but then the client would still able to have access to the integrated partners by acting or handling the order manually directly with the partners. So they could be able to basically log in into the trading venues. They would also be able to log in into the custody, because Trevor is not the gate to the custody. We are just enabling all the processes behind. So in the worst case, they would be able to handle everything manually. And that's also a kind of secure way for them to be sure that there will never be a case happening where they lose control over the assets.
Okay. But that manual case will only last to a certain degree, I think, at a certain point. If more and more traffic runs digitally, then I think your clients will depend on you being live. So other clients who want you to be on-premise in their systems or deploying directly into their control, especially in that new sovereignty discussion, I think this might get new traction, this argument. Do you hear that? And how do you react?
Yeah, I mean, natively, we are hosting our systems as an SaaS solution on AWS as a provider. And this is quite secure, quite safe. But nevertheless, we sometimes, I know those discussions. And what we are happy to do is also to run our infrastructure completely on a, I would say, private environment within a bank. It's no problem at all for us. You just have to discuss then how to manage all those services, if we still can do it or if it's not possible. That's the thing that you have to, I mean, align.
I think that's always a trade-off in these questions, that you, on the one hand, you want service, on the other hand, you want control. And I think you need to decide which way is heavier and how deep you want to involve your own people into running these systems, obviously. Comes at a cost.
Exactly.
Cool. When you're obviously a company run out of Austria, when we look into the market overall, is your focus very much focused on the European market? Do you have this local focus, or do you also have an eye in the US with all that traction over there? What do you think about the developments in Middle East after the Iran war? I think that might be much more complicated, or Asia. So what's your view on a global perspective?
It's exactly like you say. I mean, we were founded in Austria and still based in Austria. So nearly the whole of the team is sitting in Graz and Vienna. I'm acting out of or operating out of Frankfurt, Germany, but the company is still based in Austria. And our market was first the German-speaking area of Europe, and now it is whole Europe, I would say, the core market. We could, as a technology provider, of course, also serve and support clients abroad, and maybe Far East could be interesting one day, and also the US, but right now the focus is still Europe.
Okay. Who are your competitors? Do you have competitors here locally or also in these other regions? Who are the typical go-to companies for people maybe in Middle East or Asia these days?
Yeah, I mean, if I look at our competitors, it's typically we see a setup of three. So two others besides us, one's based maybe in the US, And what I can say about Trevor's positioning here is that we are the only one based in the EU, the only technology provider providing such a kind of digital asset operating system based out of the EU. And what differentiates us as well is that we not only cover the order and execution management side, so the trading side of things, but also the treasury management and settlement and the subledger accounting for the client, so the bookkeeping side. I think that's important to understand.
This combination is quite unique with Trevor, as I understand it. The others have other main parts, I would say, that they might be even more sophisticated than you guys, but then this holistic view seems quite unique as far as I understand the market. Cool. Let's maybe zoom out and look ahead. What do you think, Thomas? What is a well-functioning digital asset setup looking like in a bank in a few years? So is this Trevor plus plus, or how do you see the future unfold when stablecoins or CBMT become the norm for a bank to run even their deposits on chain? If capital markets get more tokenized, like we see with the push in the US lately? So how do you see that whole banking infrastructure evolve over time?
Well, as I said, I'm pretty convinced that most of the assets will become a digital asset in future. So the future digital asset operating system or core banking system would be able, I think, to handle both. So the traditional assets, but also, of course, the digital asset side as well in a seamlessly integrated way. So from a perspective of the investor or user, I don't think that you see any difference between investing into a digital asset or into investing into the traditional financial asset. And that's exactly what I would expect from a future core banking system, that it would cover both worlds, including, of course, not only crypto, but also the payment side and also the tokenized asset side as well in one system, right? And also to be able to keep the flexibility in scale the system to other use cases, to other kind of asset classes, to cover all of them, basically. What's your opinion on this? That would be interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would answer with my next question and let maybe discuss that one, because that's most interesting. For me, the question is the role of banks more generally. Yeah. So we, on one hand side, we have these crypto native players and the neobanks that obviously are much faster in adopting the new technology and leveraging the benefits of the new rails towards their clients. And then we have these banks that are your clients that obviously take intense investments now to keep up somehow and fast follow or slowly follow. The question is, how do we see their role in the future? Yeah, do we see the bank run into stablecoin yield and maybe more these neo brokers, neo banks putting a nice UI on top of a more DeFi native approach, which is much more centered in the new world, but also reaching out to the old world, yeah, incorporating equity and other TradFi financial instruments into their world? I think that's the core question for me. And I think we need to discuss retail separated from institutional players. I think that's quite a different discussion. And I've got mixed feelings, obviously. I think in the retail world, there's this combination of neo brokers, fintechs with DeFi in the back and blockchain in the back that's quite powerful. I still don't see most banks reacting in the right speed to that retail push. So I think there we might see new players winning over. On the institutional side, I think it's a very different story, very different discussion. There the moat of the TradFi players is much, much stronger from my perspective. The supply chains between all those is intense. And yeah, how do you see that? Do you see it similarly? And what does it do to your product strategy if we are right?
If you take a look at the retail side, then it's what you see today already, that we have a kind of different neobanks acting in the retail space quite successfully by providing, mobile ad-based services to their clients, either the trading of stocks and other equities or just cash accounting. And it's quite well observed in the retail market, I would say. If you take a look at the corporates and wholesale market, it's a different story, because then you have other products, more complex processes, and the know-how and also the trust of the bank maybe has a much stronger position today. And I think this is also something that will stay in the future, right? You will still be the trusted partner of your client. You will still be the kind of advisor for different processes, which cannot be substituted by some technology, maybe in part, partly, of course, but not in a whole. So you will have, I would say, more digitalized traditional banks covering the wholesale or corporate space in future as well.
Okay. Do you have one of these modern players also as your client? So did a neobank or a neobroker come around and say, Thomas, we are interested in your solution too?
Yes, of course. I mean, they basically need the same features, the same infrastructure in the bank and to run their business. And even if they did not have run a business before, it's still the same requirements. And we also have a neobroker with our clients.
I think this is a strong advantage that you actually have a peek into the future with them as a client. You might be well ahead of the curve because they might have quite unique requirements for your solution where you can actually prepare for the slower traditional business and be ahead of the curve. Is that right or am I wrong with that assumption?
It's absolutely right. It's exciting to have the discussions with the clients as well, of course. And that's the part of my job, which really is fun as well, because not only have to discussions, but also to have what you call to look in the future, right? And to see what will be the next use case there and how to design a solution for this use case. This is really, it's not only exciting, it's really fun.
Okay, very interesting. I think another thing we enjoy both, having these forward-looking discussions with clients is always very interesting to push the boundaries. We slowly come to an end, Thomas. Maybe a special question. If you have one wish free, many, many people are listening to this podcast. Who is your ideal customer profile and who should get in touch with you after this podcast to make it valuable for you?
Really good question and easy to answer for me. So I would say if you're a bank broker or neobank, neobroker or fintech platform focusing on digital asset use cases, then I mean, please reach out to me. I'm really happy to enable you in operating digital assets in a safe and compliant way and find solutions for your use cases.
I think that's obvious after this whole podcast. very nice ending. Did I miss anything? So didn't I ask a question that you were expecting? Any blank space that we left uncovered?
I think it was a pleasure to be here. I mean, it was a good discussion. Of course, it's such a broad space with that many topics that we could also discuss. But I think this would maybe be another podcast, Bitcoin, Fiat, Rock and Roll, then again, focusing on a different topic.
Let's see how your experiences evolves over time. Maybe we can come back to that later in 1 or 2 years and see what's then on your plate, Thomas. It was a pleasure. I think it's always interesting to talk to guys like you who come from a product side, and we don't mean this as an advertisement thing here, but I think getting your perspective and I think in guys like you, we assemble such a lot of knowledge and similar questions from different players in the market. And I really enjoy these practical discussions. On stage, usually we have very futuristic discussions on which asset class is the most important and next one. And when I talk to you, it's always interesting to see, okay, where does it hurt actually in the operational today, on the operational side today? I think that's also valuable for our clients or for our listeners in here that we discuss these questions. And thank you very much for being part of this show.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It was a pleasure.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
See you.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.